How's it going? I hope you liked the episode with Seamus and Godspeed, man. Hope you're in and out of there fairly quickly, and you're back on your feet soon, and sure, we'll talk to you then. So, yeah, rest up, look after yourself, and give them hell. All right? And sure, yeah, good luck, man. Yeah, and I hope some people have gotten in touch with him just to send him wishes, and that, you know, hopefully all goes well and he'll be out and back on his feet soon, and, you know, selling stuff to people who don't really want stuff and him making decent money out of it. So. yeah, so I haven't done a short story in a while, so I have one for you today. Hope yous like it, and yeah, I'll get back to doing these. I'll try and do them every week. It just kind of depends with time, really. I don't need to make excuses, but it's just the way it is. I hope there'll continue to be two podcasts a week, but I'll definitely try and put out at least one anyway. Yeah, this one is called Bliss. You wake up and it's bliss. Christ. This must be what those enlightened guru dudes on telly must feel like. Zen, or whatever it's called. Is this Zen? You ask yourself. You've never had this before. It's ecstasy, but, you know, it's without, you know, the actual, you know, drug, ecstasy. Your head is rushing. No, swimming. Yeah, it's swimming with ideas. Boom, boom, boom. Tangents connecting tangents, leading to insights and foresights. It's like a river has burst its banks and has formed a new waterfall, and it's all cascading and crashing down, down, down on your mind, and it feels utterly amazing. So what is this? You ask yourself. What's going on? This moment, this minute, no, this second, right now, this is it. This is all we have. It's all we can ever have, and it's all there's ever going to be. Everything is connected, and it's all culminating in this experience of itself, knowing itself and feeling itself for what feels like the first time ever. You sit up. Am I awake? Yeah, I am. Of course I'm awake. I'm in bed. The sun is shining in through the curtains. I can hear the birds singing outside. There's a lawnmower going off somewhere in the distance. There's someone walking around downstairs. I mean, I'm conscious. Obviously I am, but it's like I'm experiencing being alive for the first time. You lie back down. Whew. That was intense. But you don't want the feeling to go. You close your eyes and try to recapture that spirit, that fleeting feeling of oneness with the world. How did I get here? Like, to be here, like, right now. Like, if you think about it, it's too much of a coincidence for it all to have come together and happened. Like, what did Carl Jung call it? Synchronicity. It's a coincidence, but a coincidence where, like, the universe is winking at you. Like, a coincidence that's meaningful. You know, if, like, when you think about someone and then you see a WhatsApp message from them just, like, seconds later, or when you're thinking about something from childhood and a song you remember from that summer comes on the radio. The alarm goes off, disturbing your train of thought. But why am I letting it disturb me, though? I've got something on my bedside locker that's like a billion times more powerful than all the machines that put man on the moon. It's a cliche, like, but it's true. Let's not get all Eddie Bravo here and claim that the moon landings are fake or anything like that. What was that astronaut's name? Edgar something. What is it? Edgar, whatever. He'll come to me. He had a strange experience up there. He looked back at the Earth and had this intense feeling of non-duality. We're all one. Each human, the planets, the stars, the universe, we're all this one giant organism just experiencing everything that's on offer. Why can't I think of his surname? Edgar, man, it's on the tip of my tongue. I'd love to see the Earth from above, though. I wish everyone could, and we could all have this one people feeling, you know, end wars and racism and just be able to love and at least get along with each other. Dreamer, yeah, I know, but sure, so many things we have come from dreams. Anyway, Edgar, what's his name, he established some organization to do with something he called Noetic Sciences. Cool dude, kind of trying to get as much science out of the paranormal and woo as he could. And he did. Edgar, what the fuck is his name? What a life he must have had, though. Think of all the little things that must have happened and must have gone right, or even wrong, for him to end up being an astronaut on that ship and experiencing that feeling, and then going on to establish a new field in science. Well, not really a new field, I suppose, but giving legitimacy to certain things that scientists would normally, you know, frown upon publicly anyway. Sure, like, how did I even get here? All of the dumbass and stupid decisions I've made and all of the right calls I've made that have ended up with me being here. I wouldn't have even met the wife if something like, I don't know, 10, maybe more, different in no way possible to be connected things that all happened and joined all the dots together to bring me to where exactly I am now. I was working in a shop because I had hated the last job I had been in. I had been working a 9-to-5 in some corporate meat grinder of a firm, and it had been driving me insane. It was the first serious job after college, and I was earning good money, but it was sale after sale after sale, convincing people to buy stuff they didn't need or even want. You ever see those programs on telly about people who were burned by buying property in the sun? That was me. So ashamed of it now. We all knew those apartments were crap, but people had money in their pockets to burn, so we took it. But the guilt, man, the guilt of doing it was making me depressed and giving me insomnia and all. I had enough money saved up from the job, so one day I just quit. And to make sure I wasn't bored, I walked into a local Tesco's and got a job stacking shelves. It was perfect, man. I had like 10 trolleys to stack every day, and I could listen to my music in my headphones. The money was crap, but the only stress was having to wear the nasty uniform. Other than that, it was bliss. A friend in Australia I hadn't met yet was crossing a road at a busy junction after a few pints one night out on the Lash in Brisbane. A drunk driver speeds around the corner and flattens my new mate that I don't know yet. He nearly dies, but he pulls through after a few weeks in hospital and a couple of close calls, hand having to go under the knife a few times as well. So I left my corporate job and worked in Tesco's. That's two decisions right there. My friend I didn't know at the time decided to cross the street at that moment, and the drunk driver had to choose to drive that night. So we're on, what, four choices here already? And even then, like, do we count what came before? No, let's just start there, all right? Anyway, Davey got a shit ton of money as a settlement from his accident and did what all good Australians with money do. Go to Ireland and track down their ancestors and any living relatives. So I'm stacking baked beans one day in Tesco, and up your man Rocks here asking for a job. I send him off to the manager, and a few days later I'm showing him the ropes in the shop. We take a break together and get chatting. I tell him I want to get back into writing and playing some music, and he tells me that he used to be a drummer in a metal band back in Oz. Christ, man, come on then, let's just start a band. So we did. That's a joint decision, but we'll count it as five. In a town called Pula in Croatia, my to-be wife has decided to take a year off college and earn some money. So that's number six. Deferring a year that turns into two and moves to Scotland. That's decision seven, to earn some cash, obviously. She's soon disappointed by the Scottish weather. I can't really blame her there. What was it Billy Connolly used to say about... Not used to say. He's not dead yet. Says about Scottish people. It was something... What was it? Irish people who love the rain so much they move to a wetter country. Now, she knows where Ireland is on the map and what Guinness is, but that's really about it at this stage. So Davey and I and a few of the lads get a band together and live the life of Riley, playing a few gigs here and there and living it up like lads in their 20s should. Guitars and girls and beer and drugs. It was probably the best couple of months any of us had ever had up to then. And while we certainly could have made more of ourselves at the time had we been a bit more determined, it wasn't really about success or anything like that. It was all about just making music with your best friends and enjoying what we had. Living each day as it came, like, Jesus, we were never so free as we were then. With Aussies in Ireland, though, you only get a year's visa. Maybe it's changed now since I left, but you were able to extend it, but you had to advertise the job, and if someone Irish and more qualified went for the job, they had to get it. So David was just working in a Tesco, so he didn't even bother asking a job. So he decides to go to Scotland, because in the UK, his visa can stay for two more years. So what are we on now? That's decision number eight. So the band kind of stops for a bit, although a few of us keep playing and writing music for the fun of it. Once Davey settles into life in Scotland, we head over to see him. And when he moved over, he first decided to stay in a hostel. So that's number nine, until he finds his feet. While there, he meets this Spanish girl. They get on really well and they start seeing each other. So they end up getting a flat together. She's in Scotland because after watching that Mel Gibson film Braveheart, she falls in love with Scotland and decided to go there. So that's number 10. Of course, as soon as she got there, all the Scots tell her she's bonkers because it was filmed in Ireland. My uncle was a set designer in that film. But then again, like, the film was so big, it ended up hiring the Irish Army to play the extras at one stage. Anyway, if the Spanish girl Maria had realised it was filmed in Ireland, but about a famous Scot, she probably would have ended up in Ireland, or maybe not, I don't know. Anyway, on her second night in Edinburgh, Davy and Maria have a house party. At Maria's work that day, she invites some of her colleagues. She tells them that there's some Irish friends over to see Davy for a few days. We're all good crack and that they should come along to the party. So what's that? She decides to tell them about us and ask them to come. So that's two more decisions. That's 12. And then three of them come. So they make their choices. And one of them is my future wife. So that's 13 things that had to have happened for me just to meet her at a random party in a random flat in Scotland, because I went over to see a friend after he and then ended up living with a Spanish girl who probably should have been living in Ireland, who ended up living with Davy because they met in a hostel, and he decided to leave Ireland for Scotland because his visa was up, who I only met because he walked into a Tesco I was working in because I quit my corporate job because I hated it. So what are the odds there? Like, that's 13 things. So if each thing has like a 50% chance of happening, you know, I mean, because it either does or it doesn't. So that's 50% chance, yeah? But for 13 things like this to happen, the odds are mental. Like 13 times for something being 50, for 13 times of something being a 50% chance is, let me work that out here. It's odds of 0.012 of happening. So to put it another way, for all of those 13 things to go our way just to end up meeting each other, for those 13 decisions all of us made along the way, we had a 1.2% chance of meeting when I decided to leave my 9-to-5 job. Think of all the other tiny little chancy things that happened in between those bigger things, all of those little things that could have blown all of us off on a different course. Like, maybe your man didn't cross the road. Maybe the drunk driver wasn't drunk that night. Maybe he didn't. Maybe my mate didn't move into the hostel. Like, where would we be now? And like, all of those things had to happen. How amazing is that? Me and you, we had a 1.2% chance of meeting. Like, that's nothing. And then we had to go and fall in love. Like, what? The chances are even less. How could you not feel that the stars have aligned for all this to happen? And it's not a center of the universe, the world revolves around me kind of thing. It's that, just fucking hell, man, the universe has put us together against all the odds. Like, here we are. This has to be enlightenment. This must be what it feels like. To be able to look over things and realize just how unbelievably lucky we are to be where we are and how it's all led up to this incredible moment of realization. Not to mention the fact that the world didn't stop turning last night and we're cradled in the sun's loving gravity embrace and we live at just the perfect distance from the sun for life to even exist here. There's a roof over my head and food in the fridge and I have a job where I can earn some money to have enough food in the fridge so that there's food on the table. I want to climb on the roof and shout, I fucking love being alive! This is the single greatest moment that I've ever experienced, and I've never felt so alive and so loved and so blissed out and so fucking happy! The door opens and she enters the room. Wow, all of those thoughts just come crashing back again. It's insane that we ever met and got to fall in love and have a family. Jesus, it's madness when you think about it. I've something to tell you, she says. Oh no, paranoia raises his bastard head. The cat shit on the table. What? the cat, he shit on the table. Mitchell shit on the table. Yeah, and she starts laughing now. Mitchell, Jesus, Mitchell, that's his name.